88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Welcome to episode 22 of our Planet Earth series, in which we look at our home planet. Now, last week we were at a briefing for the Goddard Space Flight Center and the US Geological Survey, and we were hearing about Landsat 9, which has just been launched. The latest in a series of satellites about Landsat 9. And tonight we're going to look at what are some of the things that Landsat 9 and its earlier siblings are doing.
So I'd like to now introduce Dr. David Applegate from the U.S. Geological Survey. David is the Associate Director for Natural Hazards, exercising the delegated authority of the director.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. I'm coming to you from USGS headquarters in Reston, Virginia. Well, let's step back in time to the early 1960s, when the space race was at full throttle and millions of people around the world saw the first pictures of that big blue marble, Earth, from space. It was awe-inspiring, and for the U.S. Geological Survey, it sparked the idea of a remote sensing satellite program to gather knowledge about the natural resources of our planet. Since then, the USGS and NASA have partnered to build, launch, and operate Landsat satellite missions to gather and share Earth observation imagery, data, and information. Over the past 50 years, Landsat has transformed our understanding of Earth and allows us to better monitor and respond to changes on our planet. It's exciting to team up with NASA now on the development and launch of a new satellite that allows us to continue to observe our changing world. It's a great feeling when we're this close to launch and see our hard work coming together for the big day. Soon after launch, the operational work begins for the USGS. Every 8 days, Landsat 8 and 9 together will image the entire Earth's surface. As the satellites orbit 438 miles above Earth, the USGS works on the ground, managing satellite operations, calibration, data archiving, product generation, and data distribution. We do this through the great work of our Earth Resources Observation and Science Center and its management of a global ground station network, which, with the addition of Landsat 9, will collect nearly 1,500 Landsat scenes each day, about 50 million square kilometers, which is more than the land masses of North and South America combined. Not only does the USGS collect, process, and store the data, we also distribute the resulting information products to hundreds of thousands of users around the world. Since 2008, when the USGS first made the Landsat archive freely and openly available to everyone, we've seen rapid growth in the number of downloads and uses of the data, such as regular monitoring of water use. Last year, we surpassed 100 million Landsat image downloads, more than 40 petabytes of data. Government and industry are beginning to use cloud computing to integrate large volumes of Landsat data into decision support tools. The USGS and our many users can now quickly analyze broad geographic areas to better understand long-term trends in land surface change. Much like GPS and weather data, Landsat data are used every day to help us better understand our dynamic planet. As the federal government's most widely used land observation data source, Landsat is an important tool to support forest loss and recovery analysis, climate change adaptation, and water resource management. Landsat's economic value far surpasses its development and operations costs. Now, even as we celebrate Landsat 9, we continue to look to the future. Work has already begun on our follow-on mission with NASA, called Landsat Next, to continue the long-term Landsat data record. Landsat Next will have major improvements over today's satellites to support even better science and public services. Now, I'll turn it over to one of USGS's wonderful scientists, Dr. Birgit Petersen, who can tell you more about Landsat's value in her work.
Thank you, Director. Wildfire is a leading land management concern at national to global scales, and the Landsat missions have long supported various needs within the wildfire science and management communities. Critically, Landsat provides spatial and temporal data continuity, enabling the development of consistent products to inform wildfire management decisions. These traits of continuity and consistency alleviate spatial data gaps and allow for meaningful comparisons of landscape-level features over space or monitoring over time, and enable us to provide quality products to our stakeholders and partners with agencies such as the Department of Interior's Office of Wildland Fire, the National Park Service, and the USDA Forest Service. For example, Landsat provides key input data for deriving the suite of land fire, vegetation, fuels, and disturbance products on a national scale, but also with sufficient spatial and spectral resolution to capture the distribution of key characteristics across the landscape so that we can tell different vegetation types from one another. Say, for example, an aspen stand within a ponderosa pine forest. Vegetation type and structure are related to fuels, thereby enabling the derivation of fuels maps. These data products, in turn, are then used to feed other information needs, such as strategic planning, tactical response on fire incidents, and risk assessments. Landsat is also an important data source for remotely characterizing burn severity. In essence, we leverage the spectral difference between the pre- and post-fire images to capture changes in the landscape. For example, the Legion Lake fire burned over 50,000 acres in the Black Hills in December 2017. A burn severity map was generated using Landsat data, and within the fire perimeter, we see areas of high, moderate, and low severity, as well as unburned areas. Products such as this give land managers information about where they might need to concentrate post-fire mitigation efforts, because burn severity is also linked to other post-fire impacts on the landscape, such as debris flow during a heavy rain event in a hilly area. Furthermore, Landsat data are being combined with other remotely sensed data to provide even more detailed information about the impacts of fire here and other locations. With these data products, we can monitor historical trends and look for shifts in size, severity, or frequency of fires. We can also link these with other data to better understand drivers of these trends, such as drought. Finally, Landsat's temporal record enables the monitoring of changes in the landscape and subsequent vegetation regeneration, as Jeff alluded to earlier. For example, the Jasper Fire occurred in the summer of 2000, impacting over 80,000 acres in the Black Hills. Using Landsat-derived products from the USGS's Land Change Monitoring, Assessment, and Projection Program, we monitor the area from before to almost 20 years after the fire. The area is forested before the fire, but post-fire data from 1 year after shows significant removal of tree cover, especially in areas impacted by high burn severity. And even almost 20 years later, this impact of the fire is visible in the data. This type of information can help land managers know how well an area is regenerating after a fire, how resilient vegetation might be to fire, and transition of fuel load in the years after a fire. In short, the wildfire community is looking forward to many more years of Landsat data. And now I introduce Dr. Inbal Bekir-Reshef, Director of NASA Harvest.
Hi, thanks very much, Birgit. Hi, everybody. As we've already heard, Landsat data has played a critical role in agricultural monitoring over the past several decades, providing Earth observations data that's been instrumental for understanding our agricultural systems. Landsat 9 provides a critical extension of the satellite data record for monitoring almost every field continuously across the globe. And these data support crucial agricultural decisions as we tackle one of the most pressing issues of this century, food security under a warming climate. The first Landsat mission was designed with agricultural monitoring as a key application area. These early Landsat observations were the primary tool for developing the legacy USDA programs for agricultural monitoring, including LACI and AgriStars, that lay the foundation for using satellite data for monitoring where and when crops are growing, monitoring crop conditions as the growing season progresses, and estimating crop yields and total production from space. Since 2009, USDA has relied on Landsat data to map operationally 108 crop types grown across the U.S. as part of its cropland data layer program. And this has set the gold standard for other ministries of agriculture across the globe for identifying which crops are growing where in their own countries. The 50-year data record afforded by the Landsat program gives us a long-term global perspective on how our agricultural lands are changing, whether that's tracking the rapid deforestation in the Amazon for large-scale industrial ranching and soybean cultivation, as you've already heard, or agricultural abandonment following the Soviet Union and the subsequent intensification, to tracking the impacts of a warming climate and extreme weather on agricultural productivity. Landsat 9 provides us a critical extension of this data record for monitoring our food supplies and helping to inform and address crucial decisions in how we manage grow and adapt our food production sustainably. Whether that's informing farmer decisions on management practices that support soil health, supporting transparent and stable agricultural commodity markets, to providing early warning of impending crop shortfalls, or supporting more efficient and effective agricultural insurance schemes. As crops change and develop rapidly throughout the growing season, timely and frequent observations are critical, and therefore Landsat 9 will play an important role in increasing the frequency of observations with two Landsats and two European Sentinels, which combined will provide almost daily observations to track every field across the globe. Its thermal sensor, TIRS 2, is unique in its role of providing thermal coverage at moderate resolution, which is critical for monitoring, for example, evapotranspiration, which is a key indicator of crop health. For NASA Harvest, NASA's Food Security and Agriculture Program, Landsat 9 will provide critical information for informing trade, food security, and sustainability decisions.
Australia is a major user of Landsat imagery.
This is Planet Earth. You're looking at Planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is Planet Earth.
We're now going to hear from Evan Jackson with episode 4 of his series on the Landsat legacy. Now, this series was prepared by the Goddard Space Flight Center, which is in Maryland.
When you think of a healthy tropical forest, you think of a cacophony of bird sounds at dawn and dusk. I don't know if you've been to one of those really deafening tropical forests where you can't really hear yourself think. We didn't really hear that. And so I think one thing that's so powerful about acoustic data is kind of the visceral appreciation for change when you can actually hear the silence.
Dr. Danielle Rappaport is a forest ecologist who uses nature sounds to measure the health of the Amazon rainforest.
Landsat has allowed us to map those changing dynamics and get a really wonderful objective annual time series of how humans have been modifying the Amazon forest.
Landsat helped Danielle and her team target areas of human activity, bumping up against the Amazon forest, a region known as the frontier. From there, she used bioacoustics to assess the effects of human activity on wildlife.
Landsat was really the backbone of this study.
Danielle is one of thousands of scientists that has paired Landsat data with an entirely different data set to uncover a more nuanced understanding of the world. In many cases, one set of data can tell you what is happening, while Landsat can tell you why it's happening.
So the case that we always look at is the Middle East, where particular irrigation has led to a depletion of groundwater.
Basically what that means is the NASA satellite GRACE picked up some strange readings in the Middle East that indicated their groundwater had suddenly decreased by an alarming amount. Landsat later revealed the cause via images of the land surface. Over the past several decades, Saudi Arabia had begun to employ a method of irrigation that was so water intensive, it literally changed Earth's gravitational pull in that particular region. These partnerships between satellites sound great. After all, teamwork makes the dream work. But how do you make two different data sets from two different satellites sing? Here's the secret. Different data sets are complementary and not in competition. See, Landsat data tells us about local conditions on the land surface. Forests, neighborhoods, farms, deserts, farms in deserts. Meanwhile, GRACE gives a broad, regional view of water levels underground. Using the two together deepens our understanding of the world, letting us see what causes led to which effects. But GRACE is not the only partner for Landsat. The European Sentinel-1 uses radar to see through the clouds that block Landsat's view, while Landsat reveals the colors and characteristics of the surface. And NASA's JEDI uses laser pulses to measure the height of trees and help map the biomass of a forest. This nicely complements Landsat's view of the canopy top, which assesses the health of the trees, not to mention the long data record that lets us track changes over decades. Landsat is also a great complement to other similar land imagers. In fact, our friend Jeff has done a lot of work to harmonize Landsat and Sentinel-2 data. Back to you, Jeff.
Sentinel-2 is very much like Landsat. It's a Landsat-like system that the European Union has fielded since 2015. And so the real key there is putting Landsat and Sentinel together, because increasingly what people are looking for is a daily observation at that kind of resolution. You know, there's been almost an explosion in the number of Earth resources satellites, Earth observation satellites that are out there in the international community. You know, in addition to Sentinel-2, India, Brazil, China, Thailand, they all have their own Earth observation programs. Increasingly, it's about putting all of that together and harmonizing the data, or at least using them in time series kinds of ways to really accelerate the use.
What does it mean to be worthy of a legacy? Eight generations of Landsat satellites have quietly observed a changing Earth from 438 miles above for almost 50 years. Like most things worth doing, it hasn't been easy.
I think Landsat program today is probably healthier than it's been in a very long time. We have two operational satellites on orbit now. Landsat 9 will join the fleet in 2021. And then in the late 2020s, we'll have the Landsat Next system coming up. We don't exactly know what that's going to look like yet, but the planning is in place, and I'm confident that it's going to be there.
Born during a time of limited technology, Landsat's founders were dreamers who laid the foundation for limitless future innovation. As we change, so do our forests, farms, cities, and suburbs. It's a mission that spans generations, and one that we can rely on to tell us what's actually going on when the surface of our planet goes through transformations. Now we're launching Landsat 9, the continuation of that dream. We've enlisted our best and brightest to work on this decades-long mission, and we will for decades to come. 50 more years of Earth data in the future? We'll see you there.
Well, this has been the Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie.